Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. It's a lovely evening at the Ajeers Bowl, and particularly a lovely evening if you're a Kiwi, because the land of the long white cloud are the inaugural champions of the World Test Championship, and deservedly so, really. An emphatic 8-wicket victory, which actually, Simon, for quite a long time, even today, you weren't certain of. But in fact, in the end, there was a feeling of inevitability about it, actually.
Yeah, it was really bizarre watching the Kiwis sort of dancing there, changing room at the end, because they knew they were going to win for about the last three-quarters an hour or so. But amazing on this final day. And we were talking this time yesterday, you know, probably going to be a draw. And as it turned out, New Zealand rather cantered to victory. They had seven overs left when Ross Taylor, it felt rather appropriate that Taylor hit the winning runs when Ross Taylor hit the boundary that took New Zealand home by 8 wickets. So an emphatic victory in the end. India well beaten. And, you know, in a way, they were sort of, it was like an arm wrestle. It was a real tussle. But
you said it was boa constrictor cricket.
Well, there was some boa constrictor cricket yesterday, and there was some arm wrestle.
The snake kind of lay down in the end, didn't it? And died rather limply, actually, in India in the end.
Yeah, they did. I mean, the wicket of Kohli was crucial, wasn't it? In the first half an hour, he came out yesterday. He was sort of bristling. He was confident. He was positive. And then they got him out 25 minutes into the day's play. And from there, New Zealand sort of gradually, sort of inexorably, took control of the match. They were the boa constrictors, actually, weren't they, on this final day? They squeezed the life out of this Indian side, you know, a very good Indian side as well. And New Zealand, who only just qualified for the final, they only qualified for the final because Australia's slow over eight had points deducted. That's the only reason they qualified. Well, not the only reason. They obviously won some matches as well, but Australia would have qualified without a slow over rate. And here they are, the first World Test champions, past 6 o'clock on the sixth day of this Test match. We got there in the end. I mean, you said right at the start it was going to be a positive outcome to this game.
Well, I also said, and I'm going to cut this in, that actually, when we had this debate about who was going to win this championship match, and we had Simon Dool and Dinesh Kartik on our virtual cricket club, and Simon Dool, when asked, said, oh, well, you know, the land of 1.3 billion people are going to win this. And I said, rubbish, it's your time. And absolutely, it is New Zealand's time, and it's been proved by this result. And I'd just like to say a little bit of credit to the staff at the Cricketer magazine, because I convinced them to create our new issue around New Zealand cricket, partly because they'd just beaten England and given them a good old hiding in that short Test series. But I suppose I had a bit of a hunch that they might do better in this final match than perhaps a lot of people did. New Zealanders anyway like to sort of preach the underdog kind of philosophy. And I just thought, you know, the way they're playing not only cricket, but rugby as well. Clearly, you know, the All Blacks are the blueprint for how to run a sporting operation. You can hear all the fireworks, by the way, in the background to celebrate their victory. We're just overlooking the ground where all the celebrations are going on and the pyrotechnics are happening. You know, I just felt that, you know, New Zealand were, it was their time to win this tournament and this final match. And so our front cover of the new Cricketer issue says New Zealand new model army, and it's out tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, there's no need to cut it in, Yoz, your prediction. I vouch for it. I remember it. You were very clear. I said I thought India, you know, were all round the better side. Didn't necessarily mean they were going to win, but I felt they were the all round better side with sort of more general talent than New Zealand. But New Zealand played magnificently over the days that we had here, and it was truncated, the weather. I think they won a good toss, didn't they?
Yeah.
And also, I think they had the better side for the conditions.
Yeah.
I think the fact they had five pace bowlers, and that really helped them. They could, they could keep that pressure up on India the whole time. India had 3 and 2, and I think there were times, actually, especially in New Zealand's first innings, when they were crying out for a fourth seamer, and they didn't have it. And, that the balance of their side didn't allow them to have it. And it's probably going to be, it might well be, who knows, it might well be an issue going forward into the England series as well. There are times when, they'd love four seamers to keep the pressure on, but they won't be able to do so.
Yeah, and they had two key men, particularly for these conditions, but I think going forward, one of them will be hugely influential. Of course, Kyle Jameson, the man of the match, deservedly, for his 7 wickets and also his runs. And Tim Southee, an old-fashioned style swing bowler. And that was ideal for these conditions because he was able to just pitch the ball a little bit fuller than most of the Indian bowlers, who are sort of more back-of-a-length bowlers. But Jameson was the key crucial difference, partly because of his height. And the interesting stat that came out sort of towards the end of about the third day was that both Kohli and Pujara, which is the sort of engine room of the Indian batting order, struggle a bit more against tall bowlers. Mm. Their batting average is at least 10 runs lower against tall bowlers like Jameson than any others. And also, actually, Jameson kept a very good control on the Indian batting, only conceding 1.3 runs and over in the match, as well as the 7 wickets he took. Those two key wickets he took this morning, Kohli and Pujara, classic wickets of about a man with height and accuracy, just a little bit of extra lift causing those batsmen discomfort. And that destabilised India's second innings, and they really only mustered 170-odd in the end, which was never going to really seriously tax the New Zealand second innings. But also, just one other thing, Jameson's batting. Very useful, 20-odd runs in that first innings for New Zealand, and Southee as well, a very valuable few runs down the order, which India couldn't match.
Yeah, and it got them going as well. It got the New Zealand innings going. It had been in slow motion for most of it. And those two, Southee and Jameson, it got some momentum, some forward momentum, got that very useful 32-run lead. I mean, Jameson's figures are incredible. 46 overs, 22 maidens, 7 for 61. I know it was a pitch, that was in which it was difficult to score. Andy Zaltzman came up with a stat that those are the most economical figures in a test match in England, match figures of someone who's bowled 20 overs or more since 1994. So the most economical bowling in England in a test for 27 years. And what a time to produce it in one of the ultimate test, as it was described, one of the biggest test matches in history, the first match of the World Test Championship. And of course, Jameson as well today. I mean, the game could have finished much earlier. Jameson also found the edge of Pant's bat, and Tim Southee at second slip dropped the catch. And I know you were not upset, but you were questioning whether Southee should have been in that slip cordon.
Well, very much so, because basically Tom Latham has caught faultlessly during this summer in England. And also, I don't like a fast bowler who is actually bowling at the time from the other end stroke going into that key second slip position. I think
why not?
Just because it's tiring. I mean, bowling takes it out of you, fast bowling, and you need to rest in between overs. You can't concentrate at second slip as effectively, I don't think. And there have been few cases. Ian Botham would be one, I suppose, of a fast
bowler. Bob Willis fielded there as well. Where did you field?
Third slip. Oh, I was down on the boundary as far away as possible. And I do think that that's important for bowlers, just to rest their mind. It's hard to concentrate. Look, Tim Southee's a very good fielder, and I know he's taken some great slip catches, but he's dropped 3, actually, this summer in different games. And that could have been a massive drop. Luckily, Henry Nichols then took an absolute stunner, running back over his shoulder to get rid of Pant. But that was their one sort of mistake, probably, that New Zealand made today, was that putting Southee into second slip, a really key position. But going back to Jameson, You know what was so impressive about him? And I've been watching him now, probably like you, for the last few months, and he's improved every game. You know, even at Lourdes, I thought, yeah, he looks all right against England, but there's room for improvement. But here, you know, he was bowling that relentless line that you'd identify or associate with people like Courtney Walsh and Curtly Ambrose, bashing away at just short of a length, but able also to pitch the odd one a bit fuller and getting the swing and just never letting the batsman get away. Absolutely superb.
Here's another stat. You talk about not letting the batsman get away. He bowled in the second innings 24 overs and he did not concede a single boundary. I mean, that is amazing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, no, absolutely right. The pitch probably played into his hands a little bit because it did have that bit of extra bounce. I think great credit to the ground staff, actually, because I thought that pitch was... There was only 250s in the game. Well, you know, maybe it was a little bit too much in the bowler's favour, but that was largely due to the overhead conditions. And today, it played pretty well until Bumrah got one to lift into Ross Taylor's head. Just tremendous control from Jameson. But within that control, some potent deliveries swinging both ways as well.
We've rather tossed away Henry Nicholls' catch. I mean, I know you said it was an excellent catch, but I think we should just dwell on it a little bit more because it was at quite an important stage of the day. Because I think there was a scenario. New Zealand won with seven overs to spare and they won by 8 wickets and it looks comfortable. But I think there was a scenario that if India had got another 40 runs, obviously that would have extended the game, but it would have, I mean, it was quite tough for New Zealand to start with, and they battled away, but because they only had to chase 139, you know, you knew that eventually the pressure was going to release a little bit. And so if it had been 180, 190, then you know, that might have been a heck of a chase, and there might have been a lot of pressure brought to bear by the Indian bowler. So the Pant dismissal, absolutely vital, because as soon as he went, then the rest followed pretty quickly. It was a magnificent catch. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's worth seeing if you get the chance. But in a strange way, I'm not sure if TV necessarily does it justice. You almost have to...
We tried to, actually, because we put a line on it to show how far he ran, 40 right. metres. Right. But and obviously all the different cameras. But 38 cameras covering this game, yeah. by the way. But, I mean, one of them sort of did get the run back that Nicholls had to do and trying to judge the ball as it was coming over his shoulder out of a blue sky. And then he had to sort of adjust at the end and take it just in front of the, or just off the ground to his right. So he had to sort of move his hands quite significantly to the right from the original position because the ball tends to, those sort of top edges tend to swing and swerve at the end.
Yeah, what I was going to say was, I mean, well done to TB for all those 39 cameras. That's great to, you know, show the degree of difficulty. And of course, you can now with so many cameras and also.
Yeah, I don't think it does actually show the degree right. of difficulty, but, though, really. But, well, you know, we tried our best.
Yeah, I think the point I was going to make is to be on the ground as a spectator, you really appreciated it. I mean, I was watching it from the balcony of my hotel room and I had a really good view. You could see the ball steepling into the sky. And as I watched it, I thought, my money's on the ball, my money's on the ball, my money's on the ball, my money's on the ball. What a catch. You know, it was that sort of feeling. You know, it was one of those you think he's not going to get this.
And later on, there was another one like that, wasn't there? When Ross Taylor went for a big hit and got a top edge, and the money was on the ball, but that was Bumrah underneath it, and I don't think he ever laid a hand on it. Yeah. And that, you know, those catches probably go down more often than they're taken. Yeah. Those really difficult ones over your shoulder, running back, the ball spinning in the air. And going away from you all the time.
What was this a triumph for? Was it also a triumph for New Zealand's preparation? I mean, they did come to England and they played two Test matches. They were, you know, they were ready for this game. Although, you know, lots of times these days we see players, you know, having to go straight into international cricket with very little preparation and doing perfectly okay because they're sort of used to it now. Do you think New Zealand came into this game just a bit better prepared than India and the conditions suited them? Is that too simplistic? They, you know, not just on the day or over the 6 days, they just outplayed India. You know, they're a very fine side and they just outplayed a decent Indian side.
No, I think that the first thing that you said is probably right. I think they were a bit better prepared. I don't think that was India's fault. I think New Zealand just had the benefit of those two Test matches against England. And they were a slightly better equipped side, bowling-wise particularly, to utilise these conditions. But For New Zealand, generally, it's a triumph of teamwork. It's a triumph of a squad as well, with players able to come in, the likes of someone like Matt Henry, you know, able to come in and bowl superbly in that one test match at Edgbaston and now be on the reserve bench again. And just the different bowlers for different situations. I mean, someone like Neil Wagner, you know, what a tremendous cricketer, not only actually with the ball, but, you know, diving around in the field and his aggression and the way he got to Jadeja's wicket today. You know, they couldn't get the man out with the normal sort of orthodox method, so he went round the wicket and tried loads of bouncers. And some, you know, it takes a lot out of someone to keep thrashing the ball into the middle of the wicket and get it around chest high. He was doing it to Pant as well. And in the end, it worked. He got one just a little bit more offside, and Jadeja, uncertain whether to play or leave, got the edge. And that could have been that was probably almost as crucial a wicket as the Pant one, because Jadeja could have done some damage. So it's just all those guys. I mean, Ross Taylor at the end, you know, gritting it out, gutsing it out when they'd lost those two early wickets to Ashwin. Kane Williamson, a five-hour innings in that first innings of New Zealand, just to kind of try and absorb the Indian bowler's sting and grind them down. I mean, virtually every player you could highlight had some kind of contribution. Just to interrupt the conversation briefly to talk about Mission Teas, a product that actually Michael Vaughan told me about originally. It was founded by Tom Whittle, who was a sort of young entrepreneur on a nine-month cycle ride through South America, and he was struggling a little bit with his energy levels and his stamina. And then he discovered these Argentine herbal teas based around two herbs, yerba mate and matcha, renowned for their slow release of energy. And when he came home, he produced a range of teas. He's called Mission Teas, a range of herbal teas. They help with performance, energy boosts, hydration, relaxation, and even sleep. And now a number of sports stars, footballers, cricketers, and athletes actually swear by them. And they really are quite delicious, as well as incredibly beneficial, especially if you're an active type of person. And they avoid the dependency on caffeine, which so many of us have developed. So I feel really upbeat about Mission Teas. And Mission are offering listeners of this podcast 20% off your first order if you go to missionuk.com and type in the code cricketer20 at checkout. So that's missionuk.com. Use the code cricketer20 and give Mission Teas a try.
What we should do is turn to the World Test Championship itself and ask the question, was it a success, this final? And will it work going forward? Is it a good idea? What suggestions could we put forward to improve it? Or is it just a question of really there's got to be compromise because of the fact there's so much international cricket played and you just have to fit in the series where you can? What is going to happen in the next iteration of the World Test Championship is it's going to be 12 points for a win, and it's not going to be one of those situations where each series is worth 120 points. And if you play a two-match series, you get 60 points. And if you play a five-match series, you get 24 points or whatever it is. Every match is going to be worth 12 points. And then the number of games you play is going to be sort of divided by the points you get. So you're going to get a percentage, like they ended up this time. That's what they're going to do. Perhaps, you know, they're just... That seems to be a sort of a compromise situation. I mean, in an ideal situation, it would be good to have everyone playing everyone, wouldn't it, in a series? So you have, you know, the top, say, eight test teams, possibly, I don't know, playing everybody home and away, and then, you know, you have a real sort of evenness about it. But that there just isn't the room in the calendar to do that. So first question, then, is that satisfactory to get, you know, the top two teams?
Well, I think that it's been a difficult process, partly because it's been interrupted by COVID and because the whole calendar, the international calendar, is such a mess at the moment. Gradually, perhaps over time, now that the dust has settled eventually on this tournament, it will become clearer, perhaps for the ICC to be able to plan ahead a bit more effectively. And, you know, hopefully there won't be another pandemic to interrupt the process. I think it has been a success. I think it's drawn a lot of attention. It's created a lot of interest. I think it's made all the players focus on it as well and make themselves available whenever the points are at stake for this particular tournament. I mean, generally, I think it's been wonderful. I mean, the Indians have been staunch supporters of it, which is good to get them their buy-in, isn't it, on this format of the game. I like the idea of points per match, and I think that, you know, what you often find in three-match series is, you know, say one team takes a 2-0 lead, that makes the third match almost irrelevant. Well, now it's not irrelevant because, you know, you can still win points for the championship. So, yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some tinkering, but the main concept I love. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect, not by any means, but I like the idea of a World Test Championship. I also quite like the idea of a one-off match as well. Some people were saying, Ravi Shastri was saying there should be a best of three, and you know, possibly in an ideal world. But I think there's something about on the day, and that's what finals are. You know, England dominated white ball cricket, ODI cricket, didn't they? But actually, what it came down to in the end was those big moments on the day. And it's the same with tournament football, isn't it? You know, you can say, oh, yeah, we were unlucky, you know, this and that happened. But on that day, on that night, or that, you know, afternoon, can you come up with the goods on that afternoon? So I quite like that. You know, the weather situation in a one-off match is an issue. I saw a suggestion from Mark Taylor, the former Australia captain, saying that, you know, perhaps we could have a timeless final, but with the first innings restricted to 150 overs. I think his thinking there is one of the problems is that, you know, it could be really boring because you could just bat on and on and on and on. You know, you just, you know, and not try to score too quickly. And you want the final to be a bit of a spectacle as well. You want batters to be playing shots and, you know, to be exciting. I don't think you just want grinding. The conditions here, I think, made it a bit of a grinding match. So, you know, a limit on the first innings. I mean, that's a bit artificial, isn't it? It's not normal in Test cricket you'd have that. What about that suggestion? So a timeless final, but a limit on the number of overs you can bat in the first innings.
I wouldn't have a timeless final. I'd have a five-day final in the same format as all the other matches. And I think what they've done here, added a sixth day, maybe they should add 2 days extra just to make sure you get the 90 overs in per day. You get the total of whatever it is, five nines of 45, 450 in total. Yeah. Make sure you get the 450 overs in. I wouldn't schedule it in June in England because, as we know, we've seen this rain this week. And last year in the World Cup, 2 years ago in the World Cup, it was raining in June and a few matches were washed out. So perhaps June isn't the best month for it. It should be a bit later. I know it's sunny now and it was sunny last week, but June is a bit of a lottery. Yeah. So if it's going to be in England again, which it's likely to be, and it's apparently going to be at Lord's, then it needs to be in July to me.
Yeah, well, the problem with playing in England is you can never predict the weather from 1 week to the next. So I think June, July, August, you know, any of those times are fine because those are, you know, it's generally warmer then. And if you are going to play in England,
I'd have it in the school holidays as well.
Well, okay. Yeah.
You know, so that we've got loads of kids can watch. Yeah, and, no, you know, that raises more profile for the test match format.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But I mean, that's here, though, isn't it? That's, you know, just in the UK that it's the school holidays. Around the world, you want to draw the worldwide audience as well.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, you've got time zone issues and things like that. So, okay, I don't think you can be prescriptive about, you know, you don't hold it in June in England. Because, you know, we've had 2 weeks of glorious weather before the World Test Championship put the stumps in the ground and then it started to rain. You know, the first day, it started to rain. I mean, but we got through. So the extra day, I think, is, you know, that was good foresight, actually, to tackle another day on. What about not holding it in England at all? What about, you know, going to India and holding it, or Australia?
Share it out. Yeah, I mean, why not? Like the World Cup. Yeah. Share it round and play in different conditions. Very, very important to do that. And make sure each country buys into the, like, making it a festival of Test cricket. Absolutely right. So that would be great.
But would you hold it in say somewhere like South Africa where Test crowds are not very good, or West Indies where Test crowds are not very good?
Well, yeah, I think you have to encourage them to support it. You know, any Test country that is capable of putting this game on, I would absolutely say, in the same way as the World Cup, I would say they deserve to have a go.
And you look at the teams who are playing in the World Test Championship. Is there a bit of a two-division situation, though, where you've got England, Australia, New Zealand and India, and then sort of the rest. So you're only going to get one of those, two of those four in the final, or is it just goes in cycles and teams?
Pakistan
wane and teams rise.
Yeah, West Indies. You never know. I at the moment, I know there's a lowish ebb, but you sort of feel there are things happening in some of these places. Certainly in Pakistan, certainly in the West Indies, there are good talented cricketers coming through. So I would be encouraged to try and share this tournament out around the world. You know, in the six or seven countries, eventually Pakistan, the four you mentioned, Pakistan, South Africa, and West Indies, and that gets you through to what, you know, 2035 or something.
Well, yeah, I think the next cycle is to 2031, isn't it? But that's what they've got in the calendar. So every 2 years now until 2031. So I make that about another four World Test Championship finals. And you definitely got the sense that both sides were really up for it. And the Indian supporters who were here, I mean, in a way, it was great having them here because they made lots of noise. There was lots of colour. It's only 4,000 in the ground, but in a way, that was better for the match, wasn't it? When India play, there is a sort of carnival atmosphere.
And actually, it was a pleasure to work on it as well. Certainly from a TV point of view, the ICC pulled out all the stops. As I say, you know, 38 cameras covering it, and some of the best commentators around the world. It was a real United Nations of commentary team, and with lots of interesting input. I mean, working with people like Kumar Sangakkara, Ian Bishop, Simon Dool, Athers Nasser, you know, Dinesh Kartik sort of introduced late on, Sonny Gavaskar. You know, there was lots of really interesting input there. I think it was an education in the game and an exhibition of the game, and certain many masterclasses have been made as a result of this commentary team, a crack production team as well. The sort of remnants of the Channel 4.
It must have been because you were working on it.
Yes, I know. The remnants of the Channel 4 production team that did the test series is in, you know, the early 2000s, many of those individuals sort of back on site. And actually it was a tremendous backroom production, which I think really added gloss to the event.
Yeah, I suppose the only problem is that if you're turning on and there was a lot of comment from around the world saying, why they hold it in England, it's raining. That's the thing. You can present the cricket that's played brilliantly, but when people go, oh no, it's another day of rain. But I think the really good thing for this competition, a very good all round side has won it. And also, we got a positive result. And, you know, it took us a long, long time. Was it 6:30 on the sixth day? It feels like Genesis, doesn't it? On the seventh day, God rested or whatever. You know,
but it does feel like we've been here for about 3 weeks as well. Yeah. But it was a good venue for the event as well in the end.
Yeah, I mean, well, it is a good venue here, isn't it? The Hampshire Bowl goes back to the Aegeus Bowl after this match. It's a lovely sort of countryside venue. Not always easy to get to for spectators, but they turned up and there was a good noise every day. I think it's important. You know, it's an interesting balance, actually, that idea of playing in a country where the weather is going to be good. Someone suggested that the UAE, but no one's going to turn up in the UAE to watch it, are they? But, I mean, there are Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi expats there working, but they work during the day and they'll come for T20 in the evening. But for a test match, I'm not so sure, possibly involving India, who knows? But I mean, you can imagine if it was scheduled England, Australia or something in the UAE, not many would turn up. So you've got to think about that. So England does seem a good place to hold it. I can see it working in India. I can see it working, you know, even in, you know, somewhere like New Zealand in one of those sort of outgrounds, and Australia as well, possibly South Africa. But
perhaps the winners should host it the next time.
Well, that might be a reasonable suggestion. And off to New Zealand for the next World Test Championship final. But you think it's going to be at Lord's, do you?
That's what I've heard.
Right.
Yeah. And in 2 years' time, so 2023. I mean, Lords was supposed to host it this time, but because of the hotel we're in at the Aegeus, it seemed more appropriate in these COVID times to have a more secure environment. But hopefully, in 2 years' time, we'll be out of the worst, and then you can have a proper final at Lords. Yeah. I like it here. I mean, I think it feels modern. It feels quite traditional as well. You know, in the sense that there's sort of a pavilion at the far end, and you know, the excellent facilities here, the nets and the indoor school, and there's a golf course to relax on and the hotel on site. I mean, it's a tremendous setup.
So the World Test Championship concept is not a dud. It works for the game. Is it? I mean, is it the salvation for Test cricket, or is it just something to try?
No, I think it is the salvation for Test cricket. It gives focus to most Test matches that are played. And sometimes Test series do seem a bit sort of irrelevant, or half of, you know, once it has been determined who's won a series 2-0 or whatever, you sort of think, well, what's the point of it? But you want to make every match mean something, and I think this tournament achieves that.
Good luck to England, because two of their series in the next cycle are going to be India at home, five matches, and Australia away. It's going to be quite a big test for them to qualify next time, right?
I think, having seen this India side be defeated by New Zealand, that England have got a bit more chance, actually, in this India series. I was quite gloomy looking ahead to the five tests against India in August, but I now feel a bit more that England have a chance if they pick the right side. They've got to bat well, clearly, because this Indian bowling attack are good. But I wouldn't write England off, actually, whereas I had about. I've seen them, the way they were beaten by New Zealand. In a way, England can feel slightly better about losing 2-0 to New Zealand, having seen New Zealand beat India.
So there we go then. The first World Test Championship final is over. We got there in the end. We got a positive result. Magnificent display by New Zealand. They've been brilliant all summer. I suppose our focus now turns back really to the England international summer. The T20 series against Sri Lanka is underway, and the next time we speak to you, we'll be focusing on what's happening with England. But I think we've really enjoyed our foray into a neutral Test match on these shores.
Yes, and just to say that Cricketer magazine I mentioned at the start is out this week. It's a real packed magazine full of fascinating stuff, including a big feature on what makes New Zealand sport so successful and elite, almost like the new model for international sport that Australia used to be, which will really anger the Aussies, of course. So you can pick that up by going to www.thecricketer.com/subscribe. There's a special offer at the moment. And please buy it, because we've put a lot of effort into it and there's some good stuff in there.
Just imagine the Aussies seething tonight, looking at New Zealand, thinking, they had our final place. If only we bowled our overs quicker and we beat them 3-0 at home, when they thrashed them 3-0 at home when they came to us a year or so ago.
Well, so our message to the Aussies is, hurry up. Get through your overs, you idiots.
Thanks very much for listening. Well played, New Zealand. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.